Morning. Today's Daphanita is Lamed Tes. We're in Lamed Ches. We're a little bit behind. Yesterday we fell back a little bit. We're in Lamed Ches. We are at the two dots Rabbi Yehuda Amradaya. We are discussing a woman and we're discussing the principle of Damkoshi. For the balance of Lamed Ches, we're going to be going over more halachas regarding Damkoshi, the rest of this sugya, the upcoming Mishnah, and the conclusion of Lamed Ches Amid Beis deals with more issues of Damkoshi. And then the last daf of the fourth parak, which is today's daf, so that's going to be discussion of chazaka in general. Okay, let's go back to what we learned earlier. When it comes to damkoshi, so a woman towards the end of her pregnancy, if it's labor bleeding and it's not labor bleeding is not tame, it's not matame. Now, even as I say, it's not matame. So as we've gone over now the last number of days, the Mishnah takes us back to Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So it means that it's not matame her through to maziva. If, however, she's during Yemei Nida, and the blood that comes out is Nida Dam, so that Dam Koshi is not going to override. The only thing that Dam Koshi overrides is Metahir, is only Dam Ziva and Yemei Ziva, and not Dam Nida. That's already been established for the last number of days. And so with that in mind, so the Gemara had a lengthy discussion regarding this basic idea. With that stated, we said that it has to be a labor bleeding that occurs towards the end of his pregnancy. What does towards the end of her pregnancy mean? So that was a machlokus amongst the Tanaim. Rameir's position is 40 or 50 days towards the end of a pregnancy. Well, which one is it, 40 or 50? So as we already saw the Gemara yesterday, it means that for a healthy woman who's strong, so that means that the last 40 days of her pregnancy, so that's going to be resulting in dam leida and dam koshi. If, however, she's an infirmed woman, she's a chola, so there, 50 days, right? Her weaker state will lead to labor bleeding even at an earlier stage, 10 days earlier. Okay, that was the sheet of Rav Meir. We went through the sheet of Rav Meir. Yesterday, we went through a brisa. This is where pretty much we ended off with yesterday, that putting all these pieces of information together, you can come out to a scenario in which a woman could be bleeding continuously for 150 days, and she'll never be a Zava Gadola. So we went through it yesterday in terms of how we do the calculations. I'm not going to do it again right now. But basically, using all this information, so a woman can avoid being a Zava Gadola, again, with extraordinarily limited circumstances where everything comes together, the damkoshi together with the Tumas Leida, okay, 50 days of damkoshi, 80 days of dam leida. You put those two together, that already gets you 130, and then through a stringing of a couple of other days, we're able to get to the number 150. Okay, that is what we saw yesterday. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Daya. We are now up to the second shita. The Mishnah Lamed Vav Amud Beis brings us more than one shita. The second shita, in terms of what is considered the end of her, the end of her pregnancy, is Daya Chacha. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. It's a month. Daya Chacha, take a look at the Gemara. We pick it up right where we left off yesterday. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, Daya Chacha, V'yesh B'dav L'haka L'achner. Now, the idea that it's the last month of her pregnancy, which is going to be the critical time mark of when she is now considered to be damkoshi, and it's not just regular bleeding, so it results in a kula and a chumra. And to explain, Ketzad. So let's say she had labor bleeding 2 days at the end of the eighth month, 1 day at the beginning of the ninth month. And even if she gave birth in the beginning of the ninth month, this is considered Yoles Bezov, meaning the bleeding over here is going to be defined not as labor bleeding, but rather as just simple regular bleeding. And so therefore she qualifies as Yoles Bezov. But it was coming with pain. Okay, but the majority of the bleeding was during the eighth month, not during the ninth month. And so therefore, eighth month, according to Rabbi Yehuda, simply does not qualify as dam koshi. And so therefore, it's defined as regular bleeding. And even though there's a day of it in the ninth month, but that's not the majority. Contrast that with the following scenario. Let's go to a scenario in which she bleeds 1 day in the eighth month, at the end of the eighth month, and 2 days in the beginning of the ninth month. And let's say now she gives birth at the end of the ninth month. So imagine now this scenario where we have 3 days of bleeding. One was in the end of the eighth month. Two was in the beginning of the ninth month. And then she had the baby nearly a month later, at the end of the ninth month. And yet, according to Rav Yehuda, what comes out? What comes out is that since two of the days of bleeding occurred during the ninth month, and that is Chodesh, because according to Rav Yehuda, the significant stamp, time stamp is going to be Chodesh. So that means to say now that that's considered Dam Koshi, and as a result of that, she's not going to be considered a Yolez Bezov, and the Braisa says it ain't a Yolez Bezov. So because Rav Yehuda puts all of his eggs, so to say, in the month being the significant marker, so therefore, as long as there is bleeding during the ninth month, so then she's considered that's Dam Koshi, and it's not going to be Metameher. If it occurs during the eighth month, it's going to be considered Dam Ziva, and it is going to be Metameher. And as long and what will gauge which one is it? Meaning, let's say she bleeds both in the eighth and ninth month, majority. So two days in the eighth month, she's considered Dam Ziva. 2 days in the ninth month, 1 day in the eighth month, that's Dam Koshi. And this is what would come out according to Rav Yehuda. Amar Vada Ba'avish Ma'mina Kasav Rav Yehuda Shipur Garim. So Rav Ada Ba'ava says that you see that according to Rav Yehuda, the shofar is Garim. Shofar is Garim, it's an unusual expression of the Gemara. What is shofar is Garim? The horn is a causative. What does that mean? So presumably what the Gemara means is that we're talking about Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh, so Bizman Beis HaMikdash, so they would blow shofar to announce the time of the new month. It's a little bit difficult to understand. I'll take it back. I'll say it stronger. It's very difficult to understand. Meaning, we're talking about her pregnancy, her gestation. It's a nine month pregnancy, and it's very difficult to understand what does Rosh Chodesh have to do with her pregnancy. Meaning, Rosh Chodesh obviously is a calendaric moment, and her pregnancy doesn't necessarily follow the calendar. Meaning 9 months of her pregnancy is specific to her. It doesn't necessarily overlap with the months of the year. So the comment of Rav Ada Ba'ava that according to Rav Yehuda, the shofar is Gorim, it's very difficult to understand. The simple pshat, you could say, although admittedly it's not Rashi's pshat, admittedly it's not Tosus's pshat, is it just simply means that for her the ninth month is a significant month. And as we already just illustrated, that's a simple pshat in the Gemara. But again, it doesn't read well in the Gemara because the Gemara over here talks about the shofar, which usually is associated with Beis Din and the announcement of Rosh Chodesh. Okay, anyway.
The shofar is the beginning of the month, and for her, it's the beginning of a ninth month.
I like that pshat. It's a simple pshat.
Oh, yeah.
I know. But I also happen, right, you see, certainly if you see Tosfos over here, you do not get that impression that he's reading the Gemara that manner. Any of the Gemara says, is that so? V'hamar shmol, inisha metaberes v'yaldeles, ela masayim v'shivim v'echad yom. Olam asayim v'shim v'shnayim yom. Olam asayim v'shim v'shoshim yom. Now the Gemara says, now we do have another tradition. And when I say tradition, by the way, this goes back to Shmuel. Shmuel says that a woman, from conception until birth, it's either going to, the gestation period is going to be either 270, 271, or, I'm sorry, 271, 272, or 273. Those are the number of days intervaling between conception and delivery. So what that does for us is as follows. First of all, it significantly limits the time in which she's going to give birth, which is the end of the ninth month and only the end of the ninth month. On top of that, it's super limiting in terms of what we're going to see in just a moment, what day she's actually going to give birth, if we're assuming that this is the only chances of her actually having the baby. Let's explain this a little bit better. Okay, we know pregnancy can be gauged in either months, weeks, or days, right? We say 9 months. You can say 40 weeks, but you could also put in days, and that's what Shmuel does. Shmuel does it as either 271, 272, 273. Why is there a range? So that's actually very simple. It doesn't depend on the month. The reason why there's a range is because even though the man inserts a zera into the woman, so that doesn't necessarily mean that conception is going to take place immediately. It could take place immediately, but the zera could be can impregnate her either on the day that they have bia, the following day, or 2 days later. As we know, so we know that zera has potency from the Gemara standpoint. Zera has potency for 3 days. After 3 days, the Gemara assumes that the Zera no longer has any potency and no longer has the power to be Mazria. Those are the givens of the Gemara. So when a man has relations with her, so from the day of relations, it could be that conception occurred that day or the day following that. That's why Shmuel says that we can have, from the time of Bia, we can have the baby being born either to 71, 272, 273. That explains the range. Now, with that said, so... It's irrespective. Why?
Will it make a difference?
No, in other words, if you're counting by days, so these are the numbers.
So it doesn't have to be exactly the end of the month, because it could be...
In other words, right, depending on whether the month's are Malay or Chaser, it'll come out a little bit differently. Correct. So the... Now, but what comes out now, according to Shmuel, is that Shmuel does not entertain for a moment that the baby could be born at the beginning of the ninth month. The beginning of the ninth month is minimally 29 days earlier, so you have to now accept a range of anywhere from 273 going all the way back to approximately 240. Mm-hmm. And obviously Shmuel doesn't entertain that. The only thing Shmuel is ready to entertain is 271 to 273. So where's Shmuel getting this from? The Braisa we just learned together said that a baby could be born at the beginning of the ninth month. So the Gemara's response is, Hudamar kechasinim arishonim. So Shmuel has other Braisas that support his viewpoint. Meaning, you're right. The Braisa we learned regarding Rabbi Yehuda and the scenarios of the beginning of the ninth month, absolutely right. Shmuel does not agree with that Braisa. However, Shmuel agrees with another Braisa, and the Gemara is going to teach it to us right now. Titanya chasinim arishonim, mayim masham shemitosem, eler birivi b'shabbos. The chasidim rishonim. Now, these group of chasidim, right, historically, somewhat before the chasidim as we know and love them, but the chasidim rishonim as described in the Mishnah, and in this case the Braisa, is referring to a group of people who were extraordinarily pious, and they had certain stringencies that they imposed upon themselves, and not just stringencies, but just behaviors that, you know, that exhibited extra levels of piety. The best example, or the one that comes first to my mind, is the way they would daven Shmoneh Esrei. They would take an hour before Shmoneh Esrei, they would take an hour for Shmoneh Esrei, they would take an hour of, I guess you would say, meditation decompression after Shmoneh Esrei, and so their davening was 3 hours. And do that three times a day, and that's most of your day, right there, for davening. The Gemara in Brachos, we're going to see the Gemara in Brachos soon enough. The Gemara in Brachos asked the question, what about learning, what about working, what about like other activities? Okay, we'll see that together. Anyway, so these are the Chasidim Rishonim. So here, the Braisa reintroduces us to the Chasidim Rishonim and shares with us other acts of piety that they exhibited. And that is that they wouldn't have relations with their wives on Wednesday. Shalo yavo nishoseim lidei chilol Shabbos. So that what would happen now is that their wives would not come to chilol Shabbos. Meaning, assuming like Shmuel, which obviously this Braisa does, the whole point of bringing this Braisa is to share with us that Shmuel agrees with this Braisa. Okay? The whole point of the Braisa now is that, look, if you are going to limit the range in which the child is going to be born on either 271, 272, 273, so that means here's what you can do. Based on the day in which the husband was with his wife, you can now know when the baby is going to be born within a three-day window. Within a three-day window. So if they're having relations with their wives on a Wednesday, so that means to say now that there is a chance, a 1 in 3 chance, right? I'm not sure if my stats are right, but still, I'll say it. There's a 1 in 3 chance that the baby's going to be born on a Shabbos. Meaning go through the calendar, go through the math, and you'll figure out, right, what number's divisible by 7, then what the remainder is, and you'll see that having relations on Wednesday now gives us a chance that they are going, that the wives are going to give birth on a Shabbos. So what do? They abstain, not having relations with their wives on a Wednesday, so that their child will not be born on Shabbos. It will lead to Chilol Shabbos. It's really interesting, meaning, as we all know, on Shabbos, if there's any kind of pikuach nefesh, and certainly delivery of a child is a pikuach nefesh question, so obviously you violate Shabbos. That goes without saying. But again, the Chasidim Rishonim, who in their minds figure, but look, we can avoid it, so Chasidim Rishonim avoid it. That's why they have the extra level of piety. So that's what they do. Now the Gemara here asks a technical question on the top of Lam Chavs Lam Abayz. Berevi v'sulau. Just come 1 second. Berevi v'sulau. So Ema Merevi v'elach. So the Gemara just wait. One quick correction. Which it's not even a correction. It's just a sharpening of our understanding. Meaning it's a 3-day window in which they can have the baby. So it's not just limited to Wednesday. It would be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Fine, the Gemara says, that's how we are going to have to read the Braisa, meaning that we have to accept the 3-day possibility of when the baby can be born. So in other words, if they're having relations in the beginning of the week, that's fine. because then the baby will be born not on Shabbos. There won't be any chance to be born on Shabbos. But Merevia Ve'elech, so the, so, I'm sorry, Merevia Ve'elech, I'm sorry, the other way around. Merevia Ve'elech, from Wednesday onward, that's when they would have relations with their wives, but the beginning part of the week, sorry, other way around. The beginning part of the week, that's when they wouldn't have relations with their wives for the chance that the baby will be born on Shabbos, and they'd like to avoid that. So, this Braisa, aside from the interesting idea that if we can avoid Chil Shabbos, we're going to do so, even at the expense of abstention of relations with one's wife, which is a mitzvah, and presuming, of course, that we know exactly when, not exactly, but we have a three-day range in which the baby's going to be born, post-conception, so making those assumptions. So, okay, that's the behavior of the Chassidim Rishonim. The whole point of bringing in the Braisa is that we do have a Braisa that corroborates the position of Shmuel, that is that the baby's only born at full term. It may be 271, 272, 273. Question? Okay, good.
That it says that it's at 271, it's Sunday, 272, Monday, and then Tuesday.
Okay, good. So the Amar Marzutra my time out the Chassidim Rishonim, and what's this based on? Dichsiv, the pasuk says in Sefer Rus Vayitein Hashem La Herayon. So you're not going to find a lot of gematrias in the Gemara, but when you do, they're wonderful. And here we have a gematria today's daf, and Hakadosh Baruch Hu gave her Herayon. So Herayon be gematria Masayim v'Shivim v'Chad Havu. The word Herayon, which is a description of gestation period, which Rus had, so it comes out to 271. I heard something wonderful. I don't even know who to credit it to, so I apologize. But the Rus is like the, in other words, there were many women throughout Tanakh who gave birth. In fact, that's how we're here. So the why is Rus the source of this idea of Herayon 271? So we all know the Medrash. The Medrash says that Boaz after the night of being with her, so he died. Right? Somehow that Medrash has a lot of popularity. So we all know the Medrash. So that means to say that with Rus, there was no doubt in terms of gauging the time from conception to the time of childbirth. That's one of the explanations I heard in terms of why specifically we have this idea by Rus.
Contradicts Rus?
Huh?
It contradicts 73, 74, so it says 271.
Right. Well, in other words, right. So, but it... No, it doesn't contradict it. In other words, it just... The range is because... The range is simply because there is a chance for conception to delay a day or 2 days. Mm-hmm. Okay, that doesn't. It's not a contradiction. It's just it sets the number, and then we just have to throw in the variable that conception may take a day or two, or three. Amar Mar Zutra. Okay. Period. Okay. So what do we have right now in the Gemara? This idea of can birth occur during the ninth month? So our Mishnah and our Braisa and Rabbi Huda says yes. Shmuel says no. Again, seemingly a machlokas metzias, which we try to avoid when learning the Gemara, but that's the machlokas. And a Braisa supporting the sheet of Shmuel. We continue. I'm a Marzutra. We are now on the top of Lamechesim and Beis. Afilaman damer yoles letisha yoles mukutayim yoles l'shiva yoles mukutayim. Okay, so we certainly have a machlokas about the ninth month. Can birth occur during the ninth month? Machlokas. We just saw it together. However, we also know that when it comes to the delivery of a baby, so a viable baby can come out during the seventh month. We know that. Meaning from the Gemara's perspective and the Gemara's givens. We've gone over this numerous times. Right? The Gemara assumes that eighth month is just simply not going to be a viable baby that is able to be gestated in an 8 month period. So that's just a given of the Gemara. I can't explain why, but that is the assumptions they make back then. In the seventh month, so it's possible for a baby to come out viable. This is, for them, would be considered a premature delivery, but a viable premature delivery. What the Gemara now is going to point out is that by month number 9, machlokas, whether it can come out anywhere during the ninth month. Fine. During the seventh month, so once it's already now in a premature state, the assumption the Gemara makes is that it can come out anytime during the seventh month. And everyone agrees to that. How do I know that? Shenamar, the pasuk says, Vayilat kufas hayamim v'atar chana v'teled ben. So, chana giving birth, right? Chana giving birth, which of course was miraculous, meaning she was an akara, and she gave birth. The Navi describes kufas hayamim. So, what does that mean? So, as the Gemara now is about to explain, miyat kufas shnayim, miyat yamim shnayim. So Tkufa is, we're gonna assume Tkufa is a season. It is. So we're gonna assume Tkufos, minimum of two seasons. That's 6 months, right? Every season is 3 months. We are also gonna say the word Yamim. That's days. We're gonna again assume the minimum of the plural. That's 2 days. That's 6 months, 2 days. So we are just in the seventh month, and Chana gave birth. So again, the idea is in the Navi, right? The Gemara assumes that this is a glop shot in the pasuk that that way, if you give birth during the seventh month, it could be any time during the seventh month. We're almost done with the sugya. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Amram, and Koshi Yosef, Mebe Shabbosos. So dam koshi at the end of pregnancy is not going to be metame her mishum ziva. That's the basic halacha. What is considered the end of pregnancy? So far we went through the shita of Reb Meir. It's 40 to 50 days. We went through the shita of Rebbe Yehuda. It's the last month. Now, there one more shita in the Mishnah, Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Shimon says 2 weeks. It is only the final 2 weeks of gestation, which is going to be Dam Koshi. And the Gemara explains. Amar Shmuel Maitama Derabanan Dechsev. Utmei Ashvuayim Kenidasa. So we know that after she gives birth to a girl, she's going to be Tmeya for 2 weeks. And then the Torah throws in the word, Kinidasa. Just like her Nida. Kinidasa velo kizivasa. Now, the simple pshah in the Torah, of course, is that, in other words, for these 2 weeks, she's Tmeya. Right? The dam that comes out is dam tame. That's the simple pshah. But the drasha now of the Gemara is, you know, it's curious that the Torah uses the word Kinidasa as opposed to what? As opposed to zivasa. So that means to say that her zava is going to be tahara. Now, when is her zava going to be tahara? Not during those 2 weeks. Those 2 weeks, she's tameya. It means that take a comparable 2 weeks, and for those comparable 2 weeks, she's going to be tahara from being a zava. When v'kama shuayim. In other words, then it's going to be 2 weeks. Now, again, it's not postpartum because she's tameya. So it's going to be the 2 weeks prior to her delivery. Okay, that's the drasha for Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. So now we're going to do the same thing that we did on the Amud Aleph, which we covered yesterday. And that is that now take the Shita, and now maximum number of days that she could be bleeding consecutively, and yet she's not going to be Zava Gadola. So within this Shita, the number is going to come out to 25. How do we get to the number 25? So Ketzad, Shtayim below Ace. So again, here's where we're going to start. We're going to start with, it's the last 2 days of her Yemei Ziva, which will not result in Zava Gadola. We went over this numerous times, right? If she bleeds on days 10 and 11 of Yemei Ziva, so a bleeding on the next day is just simply qualifies as her Haschalas Damnida. So she bled 11 and 12 on, sorry, she bled day 10 and 11 of Yemei Ziva. So count that as two. Now, Vishiva Nida, then the next 7 days in which she's still bleeding, so that's Yemei Nida. That's now nine. Ubeishalachar Nida, and now go another 2 days, that'll be the first 2 days of her next Yemei Ziva. Now again, of course she's not going to be a Zava Gadola because that requires 3 days of bleeding. So now we have 2 plus 7 plus 2, so we're already now at 11 consecutive days. Now what you're going to do is you're going to take 14 days for Arba Asar Shavlad Mitahir. Again, we're now working within the sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. So now 14 days of consecutive bleeding, which is during her last 2 weeks of pregnancy, which is now Dam Koshi, which is Tahor from Dam Ziva. So now it's 11 plus 14. That is now 25. V'efshar Shetiskash Esrim V'shisha Yom below Vlad. You can't go to 26. But if I go one more day, so then you can't do it without her becoming a Zava Gadola. So the Gemara says, but wait a second. Sorry. Lo tehi yoles bezov, comma. Below Vlad, betzalta namisagi. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Are we talking about where there was no child? If there's no child, so we are not afforded the days of Dam Koshi. And so if there is no child involved, so that means to say that all she needs to do is bleed 3 days during her Yemei Ziva, and she's a Zava Gadola. What is the Brisa teaching us? I'm Rav Sheshes, Ema B'Makom Sheish Vlad. So Rav Sheshes says, go back to the Brisa and edit the Brisa. And the Brisa must mean where there is a Vlad. So Amar Le Rava V'Hablo Vlad Ketani. So Rava says, yeah, but that's not what the Brisa said. And I'm not ready to make such an editing of the Brisa. So Ella Amareva Hachikamar. Okay, so we're not going to edit the Braisa, but we'll reinterpret the Braisa. Okay, so here's how I understand the Braisa. It's the same thing what we said. It's just a reinterpretation so that it fits a little bit better with the wording of the Braisa. To go 26 days, again, working within the sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, to go 26 days of continuous bleeding, so it's impossible at that point in time not to experience Yolez Bezov. That's, of course, where there is a baby. Over Malcolm Shane Vlad, now, of course, if there is no baby, Ella Nafel, but rather it came out to be a miscarriage, Batata Nami Havizava. My time ain't kosher in the fallen. And the reason why is because, as we already said yesterday, and we're saying again right now, and that is that this idea that Dam Koshi is Dam Tahor, that's only if it's a viable baby. If Rachmanis, it was a miscarriage, so then the Dam Koshi, you could call it labor bleeding, but halachically does not have the status of labor bleeding, and so therefore it's not considered Dam Tahor, but rather it's Dam Tame. And that's what the Bryce is coming to teach us, that if, in fact, it is a Nefel, so then it's not Dam Koshi. Okay. Adkan takes us to the end of our first sugya. Again, this is all still part of yesterday's daf. Let's just quickly recap. A woman at the end of her pregnancy, so if she's experiencing labor bleeding, that labor bleeding is going to be matar from dam ziva. It is not going to be matar from dam nida. That's the idea that we've been articulating now for the last 2.5 dapim since the Mishnah on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. That's the basic idea. And then with a lot of detail. And so, chazer over the last 2.5 lot of Gemara to get back over all that detail. Hamakasha besoch shmonim shel nekeva, kol dam shiro tahora ad sheyetzei havlad. So, the Mishnah over here discusses now the following. So, the she has labor bleeding during the 80 days of the Yemei Tohar after having had a girl. Now, there's a lot of variables over here, so let me illustrate the scenario of what is going on in this Mishnah so that we all understand a lot better. She had a girl, Mazel Tov. And so after having a girl, so what does she go through? So the first 2 weeks after having a girl, so that she is Tamei, as we just went through the Pesukim inside, and she cannot be with her husband. But then for the following 66 days, so what comes out now is Dam Tohar. Dam Tohar allows her to be with her husband. Now, it's unlikely that she'll become pregnant within those 66 days. She is postpartum. She's probably nursing. Okay, but it's possible. It's possible that she is going to get pregnant again. With that possibility of her becoming pregnant again, so now she is experiencing Dam Koshi, she's experiencing labor bleeding during this period of 80 days. Now, if you're following me well, so the following should bother you. Okay, and I don't mean to create problems, but it's an obvious problem. And that is that we're not talking about a fully gestated baby. Meaning, if we're during the 80 days postpartum, and during those 80 days she got pregnant and she has labor bleeding, obviously we're talking about a significantly premature baby, obviously. In other words, we're only at most 80 days postpartum. So, and conception can only come at a maximum of 2 weeks later. So we're talking about, you know, maybe the baby being gestated now, the fetus being gestated 66 days. You're talking about 2 months. And the Gemara has taught us not once, but twice in the last daf that there's no koshi when it comes to an nafel. So it's a problem. It just is a problem. Meaning how the Mishnah over here can entertain that this is Dam Koshi when we learned not once but twice already that there's no Dam Koshi when it comes to an Nafel. Okay, so...
What about twins that could be born several months
before? Rashi entertains that as a suggestion as well, right? You are correct. When Rashi does suggest that that is a possible way of understanding the Mishnah. But that is... Right. Right. In my notes, I point all this out. But the first example that Rashi gives is the example that I gave, which creates a significant problem in terms of what we learned in the last 2 days of the daf. Okay, anyway, fine. I raise the issue. I don't have a smart way to resolve the issue. But in the meantime, however, let's just deal with the facts on the ground or the facts that are given to us in the Mishnah. So now she's in the 80 days postpartum after having had a girl. She now got pregnant again. She now has labor bleeding. Question. This labor bleeding that occurs during her 66 days, is that going to be Dam Tahor, or is that going to be Dam Tamei? Now, it sounds like a funny question. Why do I say it sounds like a funny question? Consider that if I didn't introduce the complication of her becoming pregnant and her having labor bleeding, if she just bled normally, that's Dam Tahor. So it's a funny discussion that we're about to engage now in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, which is the Gemara is going to entertain seriously, going to entertain the idea that, you know, I know she bleeds regular, so to say, quote unquote, well, that's Dam Tahor. But if it's Dam Koshi, that's Dam Koshi, that's different. It's a really strange discussion, but meanwhile, we're going to have it. And why we're going to have it, so hopefully I'll explain better as we go through the Mishnah and the Gemara. Okay, so hopefully we're all on the same page in terms of what's happening. And now a question of getting through the Mishnah and the Gemara. So the Tanakhama's viewpoint is the one that I would have guessed. And that is, that's Dam Tahor. Meaning, I'm not going to make the argument because, first of all, I already made it. Secondly, the Gemara is about to make it. But, okay, let's just simply say it. It's Dam Tahor, right? The labor bleeding that occurs during the 80 days is Dam Tahor. Rabbi Eliezer Metame, and Rabbi Eliezer takes a shita. That's super interesting and really hard to argue, and he's going to argue it. And that is that the Dam Koshi bleeding that occurs during the 66 days of her Yemei Tahor, that's going to make her Tamea. Of course. It's going to make her Tamea. Now, Amr Lola Rabbi Eliezer. So now here we go with the back and forth in terms of arguments. So the Chachamim start, and they look at Rabbi Eliezer, and they just simply cannot believe his position. And they look at Rabbi Eliezer, and they say, come on. Before she delivered the baby, so at the end of her pregnancy, so what would normal bleeding result in? Her being Tamea. What does Dam Koshi result in? Her being Tahora. So at a time period in her life, before delivery, so where normal bleeding would be Tamea, and Dam Koshi is being Metahir, so now think about it. She's during her Yemei Tohar. So contextually, she's already in a period of Tahara, of Dam Tahor, and now she has Dam Koshi, and you're going to argue that that's Tamea? That's crazy. Well, we're gonna go over both sides of the argument. So Amar Lahem Da'il Avom and Adin Lioskin Adon. So Rabbi Eliezer says, okay. So I Kal V'Chomer is wonderful. I hear it. At the same time, however, you know the rules regarding Kal V'Chomer. So we have the principle of Da'il. The principle of Da'il says that whenever I make a Kal V'Chomer, so I'm bringing a halacha from one area to another area. Here we're going from the time that she was pregnant to the time post-pregnancy, postpartum. And so Rabbi Eliezer says that we have the rule of Dayo. Now, what does the rule of Dayo tell us? That the destination halacha cannot be any more different than the source halacha. The conclusion has to be the same. That's the principle of Dayo. So Mimahi Kalala Mitomaziva Val Tamea Tomanida. He says, look, let's go to the source. The source of this halacha is while she was pregnant. Now, you're right. Dam Koshi is Tahor. But Tahor from what? It's only Tahor from Ziva, from Dam Ziva. It's not Tahor from Dam Nida. So even as you cite your source of, well, when she's pregnant and she's bleeding at the end of her pregnancy, so that's Dam Tahor. Not exactly. It's Dam Tahor from Dam Ziva, but it's not Dam Tahor from Dam Nida. Okay, good. So now I can't be any, so now that's a source halacha. Now let's go to the destination halacha. What's the destination halacha? That is after she gave birth. And she's during her Yemei Tahor. So I'll say, oh yeah, Dam Koshi is Tahor. But only from Ziva, not from Nida. Now, if you think about this counter-argument of Rabbi Elazar, first of all, Dayo is, everyone agrees to Dayo. It is interesting. Because during her Yemei Tahor, is there a construct of Nida and Ziva? Think about it for just a moment. I know I'm pausing for effect.
Yeah, they can be.
You're saying there can be?
It cannot be.
It cannot be. Right. I tend to agree with you. Meaning, what happens, in other words, after she gives birth, for 2 weeks she's Tamea, that's not Dam Nida. In other words, that's just simply the postpartum tumah of the Torah. That's tumas leida. Then the next 66 days is dam tahor. In other words, there's no cycle of 7-11, 7-11. It's just any blood that comes out of his dam tahor. So it's really interesting what Rebbe Elazar is arguing. He's basically saying, look, the dam koshi before she's pregnant, where there she does have a construct of 7-11. I know it's strange, but we already made that point numerous times. But during pregnancy, she has a construct of 7-11. So fine, so we could parse her Yemei Nida from her Yemei Ziva. But postpartum, where now she's during the 66 days of Tahara, so there's no real construct of 7-11. But what Rabbi Lez's point is that, good, there's no construct of 7-11. So, but what I'm telling you now is that even the Ezdam Koshi being a heter before she delivered, so, but that only, it's a limited heter. And it only is limited to her Yemei Ziva, not her Yemei Nida. So what I'm telling you now is that as I'm going now to the 66 days postpartum, so there, the only thing you can argue is that Dam Koshi is a heter, but only for Yemei Ziva, and there is no Yemei Ziva. So what Rabbi Luz is arguing is, it just simply doesn't transfer over from before pregnancy to after pregnancy. Okay. I know there's a lot to think about, but I spent a lot of time with this Gemara. So the Umam b'makom sheichmei b'dam shofei eikah b'dam koshi. I'm sorry, I read all this. Amar lahem da'yavam me'din li'as kenidon mimai kalam mitomaziva avatametametnida. Sorry, I read all that already. I'm sorry. Okay, let's start with the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Teishev l'rabbas amekash besoch shmonim shel nekevah shekol damim shiroa tarim ad sheyetze avlad. Okay, so here in the Brisa, it's going to be the same. It's going to be the same information. It's just presented in a slightly different manner. The Tanakhama starts off with a drusha, right? The Torah says that after her 14 days, she sits on dam tahor, and the drusha is whatever dam comes out of her is tahor. Rabbi Lazar metame, and Rabbi Lazar says no, that's not true. The dam koshi that comes out of her during those 66 days is tameya. Amr lo le Rebbe Lazar umah b'makom sheichmei b'shofei shlifnei avlad heiga b'shofei shlachar avlad makom sheiga b'koshi shlifnei avlad einu din shenaka b'koshi shachar avlad. Now I'm not going to go translating the argument because it's the same argument of the Mishnah. Go back to the Mishnah for translation. But basically, the argument of if we're going to be maker before she delivered, we're still only going to be maker after she delivered. Amr lahem da'ilav amenedin liyoskin adomi ma'ikal la mitomaziva avam mitomat me'ah nida. And again, the Rabbi Lazar's counter argument is you can't make that kavachomer because we have to limit the kavachomer to the principle of dayo, and dayo tells us that we can't be more mako by the destination than we were by the source. Amrulo hare anu meshivim lach lashon acher. So the chachamim now in this brisa, we get one more round between the chachamim and Rabbi Lazar. Chachamim said, you didn't like our first kavachomer? Let's try this one on you. See how you like this one. Umah b'makum sheichmir b'shofi shelifnei avlad heikel b'koshi she'imo. Look, before she delivered, at the end of her pregnancy, so if it was shofi blood bleeding, regular calm bleeding with no pain, so we're going to be, she's tameya. If it's bleeding with pain, she's going to be tahara. Makum sheheikel b'shofi shelachar avlad. Now let's go to afterwards. Afterwards, where we are generally going to be mekel with her in general, einu din shenaka b'koshi she'imo. So we're for sure going to be mekel when there is pain associated with it. Now, as you heard the kavachomer in round number two, it sounds awfully similar, doesn't it? Yes, it does. What exactly the subtle differences is between the round one kavachomer versus the round two kavachomer? So that's next level Gemara. So on a when there's more time, we could flesh out a little bit better what the Chachamim were adding. What was that extra wrinkle they added in the second round of the Kavachomer as opposed to the first round of the Kavachomer? Anyway, but if I can just make it a little bit simpler, it's basically the same point. Okay, I'm simplifying. It's basically the same point. If Dam Koshi is a Kula before she's pregnant, so for sure she'll serve as a Kula after she's pregnant. So Amal Em Afilo Atem Meshivim Kol Yom Kula Dayav Lavam Nedin Liyoskin Adon. So mimai kala b'tumas ziva, aval mitumas tuma nida, aval mitam mitumas nida. And Rabbi Lazar just sits there with his arms folded, and he says, "Look, we could do this all day. You want round number two? I'll go round number three. I'll go round number four. I'm not ready to hear any argument because I have behind me the principle of Dayo. And Dayo tells me that Dam Koshi only is a kula regarding Dam Ziva, not regarding Dam Nida. And postpartum, there is no construct of Nida versus Ziva. And so therefore, you can't just simply say, oh, Dam Koshi, we're Mako. That's not true. Dam Koshi, we're only Mako regarding Yemei Ziva, not during Yemei Nida. And postpartum, there's no distinction. And so therefore, I don't think the kula exists. Okay. Amar Rava, Behazachin Reb Elazar LeRabbanan. So, in this regard, Rava's comment, Rava's an Amor, obviously, and this is a post-fight commentary, and that is, I think Rav Elazar got the Chachamim on this one. I think so. So, Lavar Misu Dama, Dama Machmas Atzma, Vala Machmas Vlad. Hachinami Vitahara Mimakor Dameha. Dameha Machmas Atzma, Vala Machmas Vlad. So look, the drasha supports Rebbe Elazar. Meaning, I know Rebbe Elazar is arguing with Kavachomer and Dayo, but even as a simple drasha, meaning we know that bleeding is going to be tahor, but only when the bleeding is internally generated and not coming from other factors and other influences. But if the bleeding is coming from other factors and other influences, i.e., the vlad is causing the bleeding, that's no longer qualifies as dam tahor. So, v'lo machmas vlad. Ema bime nida nida bime ziva tahara amakra teshev yeshiva achas lekulan. And here, as Rava now continues to give his post debate commentary, and I know what you want to say. Well, maybe that's only during her yeme nida, not during her yeme ziva. No, the Torah describes her postpartum status. So for the first 2 weeks she's tamea, and for the next 66 days she's tahara, and it is binary. Either it's tahara or it's not tahara. Meaning, there's no separation of Yemei Ziva versus Yemei Nida. And so, if the Dam is Dam Tahor, meaning it's internally generated, fine, it's Tahora. If it is externally influenced, I say external. I mean over here, like a Vlad. So, okay, that's different. And that's not going to be Tahora, but rather it's going to be Tamea. So, Rava basically says, look, it's a machlokus. I can't take a side, but Rava says, but if I were to take a side, I would side with Rabbi Elazar. I think Rabbi Elazar is right on this issue. Okay. Continuing now. Okay, so that's the end of yesterday's daf. I know it took most of today to get through it. Okay, but let's make some let's cover some ground over here. I'm going to go a little bit over time today. If you have to leave, that's fine. Totally understand. We start now with the Mishnah. The Mishnah now is going to give us a very basic discussion regarding chazakas of a woman. This is the final Mishnah, the final sugya of the fourth parak of the Masechta. I know the last 2.5 daf have been challenging, right? With the Dam Koshi discussion, I know it's been a difficult bit. The upcoming Gemara is going to be quote unquote a little bit easier, a little bit more straightforward, and it really deals with principled questions of chazak of a woman. Okay, now before we start with the Mishnah, here's what we all know, and I know at this point in time in the Masechta for us this is rudimentary, but it is important just to get grounded so that we understand and appreciate the upcoming Gemara. A woman has a cycle. A woman has a menstrual cycle. And from the Torah standpoint, a menstrual cycle operates with a cycle of 7-11, which means that for 7 days she's a Nida, and for the next 11 days she's not expecting to see blood. Those days are what's called Yemei Ziva. Now, if she bleeds during those 11 days, which she's not expected to do, but if she does so that's going to be Dam Tame, but that's not Tumas Nida, that's Tumas Zava. If she bleeds 1 or 2 days during her Yemei Ziva, she's what's called a Zava Katana. It means that she's prohibited to her husband, and it means that she's going to have to mimetar herself. But Tahara from being a Zava Katana is very straightforward and very quick. It is only Shomer's Yom Keneged Yom, which means that she only needs to experience one clean day after having been a Zava Katana, and that is going to be, she'll be Tahara. In fact, when we say one clean day, what that means is, practically speaking, is that the following day after her 1 or 2 days of bleeding, she will wait that day, she'll tov in the mikvah during the day, and that night, she'll be mitaris to her husband, right? I know it's confusing because sometimes she tovels at night, sometimes she tovels during the day, but okay, we just have to get used to the halacha. Right, so I'm sorry for the confusion. That's for a man. So for a man, so the 2 days would result in him being a Zav Gadol and requiring Shiv Nikiyim, but no carbon. And then for three, so then it would be Shiv Nikiyim and a carbon. For For a woman, no. For a woman, it's either 3 days of bleeding, and it has to be days. Separation has to be 3 consecutive days. In other words, if there was one day where she had 3 events of bleeding, that doesn't make her a Zava Gadola. That's just simply a Zava Katana. Okay, fine. So, that is the general sketch. And I'm sorry, just to finish up my introduction. And if she bled for 3 consecutive days, then now she's a Zava Gadola. As a Zava Gadola, so for her to become Tahara, now is a process. The process is she has to count Shiv Nakim 7 clean days. On the 8th day, she's going to be bringing Karbanos. She'll tovel in the mikvah on the 7th day. That night, she'll be Materis to her husband. However, to go back to the Beis HaMikdash and to eat a Karbanos herself, she has to bring Karbanos on the 8th day. Until then, she's what's called a Mechusar Kapara. Fine. Here's an interesting debate, right? We're not suddenly going to resolve the debate, but I'll just bring it up over here. After day 11, what happens then? So, most Rishonim will tell you it's very simple. What happens after day 11 is nothing. Meaning, she's no longer during her Yemei Nidah, she's no longer during her Yemei Ziva. And after day 11, meaning, we are now 18 days from the last time that she had a Haschalas Nidah. So on day 19, if there's no bleeding, she's nothing. She's not in Nidah, she's not a Zava. If on day 20 there's no bleeding, same story. She's not in Nidah, she's not a Zava. The next time she bleeds, it's going to be her new Haschalas Nidah, and we start again, 7-11. That's how most Rishonim view it. The Rambam has a really interesting opinion. It takes a lot to defend, but it's a really interesting opinion, and that is a woman always operates with a 7-11 schedule, which means that according to the Rambam, on day 19, bleeding or no bleeding, she starts now her next cycle of being a Nida. Okay? The Rambam was a doctor. In other words, then, right, he was, aside from being a Gaon, but he was, on top of that, he was also a doctor, and he knew menstrual cycles, and how can he maintain that a woman, that generally speaking, a woman operates on a 19-day menstrual cycle? So if we live during the time of the Rambam, maybe to us this would be much simpler to understand. Okay, we live 800 years later. Okay, anyway, that is the opinion of the Rambam. There are Gemaras that do seem to support this position. Most Gemaras do not seem to support this position. It is a thesis in of itself, this position of the Rambam. I understand that, but in terms of understanding the Gemara and understanding the Torah, so that's how we viewed it. That's how we laid it out.
But it wasn't practiced.
Correct. In other words, right, the Chumrah of Rabbi Zer was practiced in the time of the Rambam. Right, correct. Absolutely correct. Okay. It's not that I bring it up. It's really interesting. We're going to assume like the other Rishonim, but whenever discussing the 7-11 cycle, it's important just to note that's the position of the Rambam. Anyway. Okay, well, let's go to the Mishnah. Kol acharas hayom becheskas tahara. For those 11 days, now, the Mishnah presumably is talking about the 11 days of her Yemei Ziva. So she's in a presumption of tahara. Now, even without going through the Gemara, which we will, so it makes sense. Meaning that in the cycle of a woman, so for the 7 days of her, from the Haschalas Anida, so that is when a time where she is supposed to bleed. That is the biological rhythm of a woman, that she bleeds in the beginning of her menstrual cycle. And so for 7 days, there's an expectation of bleeding. But then, also as part of the biological rhythm of a woman, there is an expectation of a cessation of bleeding. And so for those next 11 days, that's what's called Yemei Ziva. She's not expected to see dam during those days. And so therefore, the presumption is that she's bischeskas tahara. As we continue now, we're on the top of Lamed Tesamad Aleph. Yashva lava lo batka. If let's say she sat during those days, who are we talking about right now? It's not clear. And she did not do a bedika. We're going to sharpen our understanding of the Mishnah when we get to the Gemara. So, shigaga, nensa, hezida v'lo batka. If it doesn't matter if it was inadvertent, or let's say it was something that was beyond her control. Or let's say she did it intentionally in any of these circumstances, and she did not do a bedika tahara, she is tahara. Okay. The better understanding of the Mishnah is going to come as we get through the Gemara. Higia shazvesta. Now, if let's say she's on a cycle, she's on a fixed schedule, and the shazvesta comes v'lo batka, and she did not do a bedika, harei zu tameya. So now, look, she has a menstrual cycle. She's expecting when it comes. She didn't examine. So despite the fact that she didn't see any bleeding, nevertheless, because she's on a cycle, we're going to assume that it came. Where is it right now? Where's the evidence? The assumption tells us, the presumption tells us it came. Remeir Omer, im haisa b'machba v'igeshas vesta v'lo batka. So Remeir says that, let's say, she was hiding because there was some sort of threat, whatever it was, an army, whatever the case was, there was, and she was scared. The important point over here is that she was gripped with a fear. V'higeshas vesta v'lo batka. And now, while this was happening, so she now went and passed over her shas vest, and she did not do a bedika. Harezu tahora. So this will be an exception. Meaning normally we say in the Mishnah that going through a shas vest and not having done a bedika, the presumption is that her nida period started and she's a nida. However, the fear in the anxiety that she has is going to do the following, has going to have the following physiological effect. It's going to create a recess of her bleeding. And therefore we'll assume now that she's tahara. Mibnei shecharada mesalakis es adamim. Now, this probably sounds familiar because we saw this already earlier in the Masechta, that the Gemara quoted this a number of times earlier in the Masechta, twice earlier in the Masechta. We quoted this, that what fear and anxiety does is that it creates a recess of bleeding. But during her Yemei Zav and Zava, and Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, so she is Becheskas Toma. And again, what does the Mishnah mean by that? So stay tuned as we are going to go through the Gemara and try to give a working shot within the Mishnah. Okay. Just in terms of this idea that fear and anxiety removes blood and creates a recess, an absence of blood. So the Gemara in Megillah, right? We all remember it, right? What happened was with Esther, right? Vatischachal hamalkah. And the Gemara over there says that because she was gripped with panic and fear, she started bleeding. So it becomes a little bit tricky to try to figure out what exactly is the physiological reaction to fear and anxiety. Does it create an absence of bleeding, or does it actually promote bleeding? Our Gemara says an absence. The Gemara Megillah says promotion. So, right, and there are certainly ways to try to separate and divide those two Gemaras, but, okay, it's obviously a little bit more complicated than just the Mishnah over here. Lamai Hilchasam. Okay, the Gemara's question over here is very straightforward, and that is, our Mishnah opens up with the following, that during the 11 days, she's Becheskas Tahara. And so what? Meaning, she's in a presumption of being Tahara. And as a result of that, what becomes of her? So, the Gemara is going to offer 1, 2, 3, 4 different explanations. So what I'll do over here now is we'll go through 3, and we'll stop at Rav Huna. So, we're going to get to towards the bottom of the Amud. For the remainder of today's daf. So the Gemara says, so let's explain. What does the Mishnah mean? Amar Aviyud Alamar She'en Esricha Bedika. So what the Mishnah means to say is that there's no Bedika that's required. Meaning that we have learned earlier in the Masechta that women who were involved in Taharas, so they are now held to a higher standard in terms of ensuring that they are not going to be Tamei, therefore not going to be Metamei the Taharas. And as a result of that, while they're with their husbands, normally we say that when they're with their husbands, they don't require a bedika if it's not during a vest. That's what we normally say. However, for the women who's involved in taharos, so because she's holding by this extra level of stringency, so therefore even while with her husband, she is going to be doing a bedika once in the morning, once in the evening. We talked about this already in the beginning of the Masechta. However, what we're saying here in our Mishnah is that even these women who held themselves to a higher authority and a higher standard, during her Yemei Ziva, there was no need to do so. So the Gemara says, okay, but read on in the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah continue to say? She was Yoshev and she didn't do a Bedika, meaning she should have done a Bedika. The Mishnah discusses, but what if she didn't? What do you mean? Aren't we not saying Pshat in the Mishnah is that even lechatchila she doesn't need to do bedika mechlal, the lechatchila by bedika. So sefer asan lemei nida v'hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, okay. So here's how we're going to read the Mishnah. It's a little bit choppy, but here's how we read the Mishnah. So kul yud alef becheskas tahara v'lo by bedika. So the first part of the Mishnah tells us that for the 11 days of her Yemei Ziva, it is totally unexpected for her to see blood, and therefore the presumption is that she's not going to see blood, and therefore lechatchila she doesn't need to do bedika. That's the first line of the Mishnah. Now we move on to the next line of the Mishnah. Ava bimei nidasa by bedika. But during her zmanida, there she needs to do a bedika. Meaning, if it was days in which she expected to see blood, it was yamei nida, so then the presumption is that, look, she should be doing a bedika then. Yashva v'labatka, shigagav, nensa, hezida v'labatka tahara. Ah, but if she didn't do a bedika during her yamei nida, she is going to have a cheskas tahara and still be in a state of tahara, even though she should have done a bedika. That is going to be the first round of saying pshat in our Mishnah. That is Aliba de Rav Yehuda. Let's go with our second pshat. Rav Chista amar lo tzvicha el Rav Meir damar isha shein lavest asur l'shamish. So, Rav Chista says a different pshat in our Mishnah. And that is, our Mishnah is going like Shitas Rav Meir. Which Shitas Rav Meir? So this takes us back to the end of the first perek of the Masechta, where there the Rav Meir says that if you have a woman who does not have a fixed menstrual cycle, and so therefore she does not have the predictive ability of knowing exactly when her next cycle is going to begin. It's a isha she'ein la vest. She cannot be with her husband. And it's a difficult sheet of Rav Meir. And I say difficult, I mean, if a husband and wife are married and she does not have a fixed cycle, she can't be with her husband. So that obviously results in a requirement of a divorce. We talked about this at the end of the first parak. In the meantime, however, just saying pshat in our Mishnah, so our Mishnah is subscribing to Ramir's viewpoint that a woman who does not have a fixed cycle cannot be with her husband. That's only during the Yemei Nida. So, but during the Yemei Ziva, where those 11 days there's no expectation of bleeding, she can be with her husband. So the Gemara says, what? So the Gemara says, but I don't understand. Right, you go back to that sugya at the end of the first parak. Rav Meir says that because, as a result of the fact that she does not have a fixed cycle and she can't be with her husband, so it must result in divorce. The Gemara says, wait one second, why can't they remain together, husband and wife, and they're just simply with each other intimately during the 11 days of Yemei Ziva? Why can't that be a solution? So Dilma Asya Lekukula Bimei Nida. So the Gemara says, well, no. In other words, although that is a possibility, but because she does not have a fixed cycle, according to Rav Meir, because she doesn't have a fixed cycle, so that means to say that during her Yemei Nida, she'll be mekalkel, she will just simply not know when it begins, and it will lead to the husband having relations with his wife while she's in Nida during her Yemei Nida. So Hamidik Tani Seifa, fine. So what we're saying in our Mishnah now, it's a challenging pshat. Our Mishnah is going like Rav Meir. Our Mishnah is talking about a woman who does not have a Vesa Kavua. Our Mishnah is telling us that, according to Rav Meir, they can't be with each other, and they can't remain with each other. So what's the Mishnah teaching us about 11 days? For the 11 days of Yemei Ziva, they can be with one another. Now, if you think about it, it really is a challenging pshat in the Mishnah. Because consider now that they are going to have to get a divorce, as per Rav Meir, but and if there are 11 days of Yemei Ziva, so they could be together for now another 11 days, and then they get a divorce afterwards. It's a really challenging pshat in the Mishnah, and it also begs a larger question: if a husband and wife know they're going to get a divorce, so can they be with one another? Generally, the assumption, of course, is no. Our Gemara is seemingly suggesting that they can. Okay, It's a really challenging pshat. On top of all that, as challenging the pshat is already, it's difficult because our Mishnah doesn't sound like it's going like Rav Meir. Why? Because look at the end of the Mishnah. Only at the end of the Mishnah we're introduced to the sheet of Rav Meir. What does that tell us about the beginning of the Mishnah? It's not Rav Meir. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. So it sounds like we're talking about a woman who does have a vest. So here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to learn up the Mishnah, either insert words into the Mishnah or insert understanding into the Mishnah. Either way, here's how we're going to reinterpret the Mishnah. So for those 11 days of Yemei Ziva, she's permitted to her husband. And during the Yemei Nida, she cannot be with her husband. That's talking about a woman who does not have a vest. But once she does have a fixed cycle, so then she can be with her husband, but it's just that she requires a bedika. Yashva v'labatka, shigga nensa hezida v'labatka tahara. So now, if she didn't do a bedika, she should have, but if she didn't, again, she operates with a cheskas tahara, and she could be with her husband. Higiyashas vesta v'labatka tameya. So, and if, once she gets to her shas vest, once she gets to the day where she expects her cycle now to begin, so she is, from that point going forward, going to be tameya unless she did a bedika. Now, finishing up over here. Ha mid the seifa rameir reishal av rameir. So the Gemara says, okay, I kind of hear all that as pshat in the Mishnah. What about the point that I made just moments earlier? The end of the Mishnah is going like rameir. So the Gemara says, kula rameir hi v'achi kamar. So the entire Mishnah is rameir. And again, here's how you're going to read the Mishnah. Im lo haisa b'machva v'igyesh asvesta v'lobatka tamea sher Rebbe Meir omer im haisa b'machva v'igyesh asvesta v'lobatka tar shecharada misalakes es ha'adamim. Okay, and in terms of now, properly reading the Mishnah, so that we understand that the entire Mishnah is going like Rameir, so we're just adding the prefix of Sheh. Sheh Rebbe Meir Omer, and really the entire Mishnah, in from beginning to end, is Shitas Rameir. Okay, that is a second way to read the Mishnah. So, to recap, our Mishnah says that a woman has a chazaka of being Tahara during Yud Alef Yom. What do we mean over here? So far we have offered two Pshatim. The first Pshat is Rabbi Yehuda. That is to say that there is no bedika requirement, even for a woman who is asuka b'taharos. During the 11 days, there is no requirement of doing a bedika when she's with her husband. That's pshat number one. Pshat number two is Rav Chista. Our Mishnah is talking about Isha Shein Lavest, even though she and her husband are going to have to get a divorce, but for those 11 days, she could be with her husband. Again, a challenging pshat in the Mishnah, but that is our second pshat of Rav Chista. A third pshat, Rava Amar Lomar Sheina Matame Meisleis. A third shot is that because blood bleeding is so unexpected during the 11 days of her Yemei Ziva, so she is not going to be given the Tumah Meisleis. As we learned in the beginning of the Masechta, a woman who bleeds is going to be Tameh, not only from the time that she sees the blood, but also retroactive 24 hours. Why? Because there's a chance, right, we discussed this at length in the first barak, that the blood stopped inside of her prosdor and then only later came out. So because of that chance, so therefore we're going to go back 24 hours. Fine. That is, and we already discussed, that's a Chumra de Rabbanan. Okay, all the first parak. Meanwhile, here's what we're saying now is Pshat in our Mishnah. So the last Mishnah of the fourth parak is teaching us that during her Yemei Ziva, obviously she'll be Tameya, but she's not going to go back 24 hours. And it's very good. Meaning, why is she not going to go back 24 hours? The bleeding anyway over here was so unlikely that this is so unusual, the Chachamim didn't make a gzerah. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a wonderful Pshat or Mishnah. What about the Braisa? The Braisa says that Einida and a Zava and a Shemes Yom Keneged Yom and the Yoledes. Basically, any woman who's bleeding, she is going to be given the Gzera de Rabbanan of Tumah Meisleis of 24 hours retroactively, where she's going to be Tameya. So if you're saying it's Pshat in our Mishnah, is that a Zava is not given Meisleis, what are you going to do with a Braisa? Tiyufta. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what you're going to do. It's a problem. It seems to be a refutation of Rava's position. Rava does not seem to be a defensible pshat in our Mishnah based on the Braisa. Okay, so we'll stop here today. Rav Huna really takes us to the end of the parak. So we'll start tomorrow morning with Rav Huna. So let's quickly recap. Today we finished our discussion of Damkoshi, explaining or going over the shitas of what are considered the what is considered the end of her pregnancy regarding Damkoshi, the three shitas of the Mishnah. We went through all three shitas. We did the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Damkoshi during her Yemei Tohar. Is the Damkoshi going to be Dam Tahor or Dam Tmeya? So the Chachamim say it's Dam Tahor. It's obvious. If regular bleeding is Tahor, so is the Damkoshi going to be Tahor as well? Rebbe Elazar argues, and we went through the back and forth between Rebbe Elazar and the Chachamim. And then, finally, we started the last sugya of the fourth parak today, which is our daf lamites, a woman during the 11 days of Yemei Ziva, it is unexpected for her to see blood during that time, and she's becheskes tahara. Now, what does that mean, practically, lamai hilchasa? So far, we went over three pshatim. Pshat number one is that there's no requirement for her to do bedika, even when she's a sukkah b'taharos. That's Rav Yehuda. Pshat number two, Rav Chista, is that our Mishnah is talking about a woman that does not have a ves kavua, so at least during those 11 days she could be with her husband, even though they're still going to need to get a divorce from one another. Pshat number three is Rava, which is that we don't go back Meis Ha'es, we don't give her the Tumah Meis Ha'es, because this is during her Yemei Ziva, not during Yemei Nida, although the Braisa seems to patently dispute that position.